Hello and welcome to week 15 of From the Basement Bar podcast and the end of the college football regular season that was capped by conference championship weekend. It was a glorious season that brought us on a roller coaster ride, and we got to witness some new contenders work their way to the top. It wasn't the same old, with of course the exception of Alabama, who proved once again they should never be doubted. The championship games did not provide too much drama, and we are now on a beautiful path to bowl season and the college football playoffs. The journey was fun, and we still have so much more in store. Heisman Trophy, bowl season, and Santa Claus. What a month, and what a way to end the 2021 year. All right, before we get into too deep into things here, we're going to go with our usual drink of choice from the basement bar. And tonight we have, I went back to some wine. I'm not really sure how to pronounce this, really. Chateau Michel, maybe? Sounds about right to me. It's a Sauvignon Blanc white wine. It's pretty good. Had better, but this is 13% alcohol. It's going down pretty smoothly. All right, let's move on to those conference championship games that we witnessed this past weekend. And things got started on that Friday night with that Utah-Oregon game. And as we had expected, one of the hottest teams in college football stayed scorching hot and put on another beatdown of the Oregon Ducks. Utah finished the season on quite the impressive run. They were clearly the undisputed best team in the Pac-12, and we will most likely see them be a top 15, top 10 maybe in the country next season when the preseason rankings are released. Utah, ever since they made that quarterback switch to Cam Rising, they only dropped one game with him at quarterback. Who would have known what would have happened if they would have stuck and started out with Cam Rising? They might have, with the way they ended the season, they very well could have been in playoff contention. And certainly, I think Utah will be the favorite in the conference again next season with Mario Cristobal out at Oregon, and Lincoln Riley just getting settled into his new LA digs. Although, I do not expect Riley to take long to right the ship for the Trojans at USC. The Oklahoma State-Baylor game, this was probably the most competitive game of conference championship weekend, and it was by far the most competitive, actually. Baylor pulled out a bit of a stunner, I would say, against an Oklahoma State team who had a chance to make a real claim to that Final Four playoff spot. If they would have put a beat down on this Baylor team, the playoff committee would have had a lot to think about. I mean, their resume was solid, winning a Power 5 conference. Who knows if they could have jumped a Cincinnati team? In my opinion, that shouldn't have been the case. Especially, you know, when you had Alabama then beat Georgia in convincing fashion. You weren't going to knock Georgia out. But Oklahoma State did not do that. And once the Cowboys fell, it provided a true sigh of relief for the Cincinnati fan base, as they knew all they had to do was beat Houston and they're in. Baylor was forced to play freshman quarterback Blake Chapin for the injured Bohannon, and offensive coordinator Jeff Grimes called a perfect first half of offensive football. He put the experienced signal caller in all the right situations. It was Grimes versus Knowles, coordinator versus coordinator. They're both up for the Broyles Award as the top coordinator in the country. We're going to talk about Knowles a little bit later. Jim Knowles. But Jeff Grimes, he straight up coached he had the best play calling half of any in all of college football this season, the way he was able to get the most out of that offense with Chapin, who is a freshman, making only his second career start. It was highly impressive. He literally was perfect to start that game. Spencer Sanders of Oklahoma State was supposed to be the poised, experienced quarterback on the field that day, and he was anything but, as he tossed four interceptions. Baylor's defense rattled him in both meetings, as he threw three interceptions in their previous matchup. Dave Aranda has the Baylor Bears on the right track heading into next season. That fan base should be excited what Aranda can do moving forward. In the next game, Cincinnati-Houston, history was made. Cincinnati, with a dominant performance over a streaking Houston team, sealed the deal for a top-four playoff spot for the first time ever for a Group of Five team. And let me tell you, it was much deserved. I've been calling for the Cincinnati to be in the top four to finally make the playoffs. They are a complete team, and we finally get to witness them, you know, make their way into the playoff semifinal. Houston, it was not an easy game. Houston had not lost a game since opening weekend, and some thought this might provide a bit of a challenge to the Bearcats, but that was not the case once they took the field, as Cincinnati did what they have done all season, and they took care of business. They knew following that Oklahoma State loss, it was win and guaranteed in. This is a great moment for college football, and I'm glad Cincinnati proved they deserved the respect I and many others have given them this season. Cannot wait for the semifinals there. The SEC Championship, this was by far the shocker of the day, I think. It was the shocker of the day. It was an SEC massacre, as Nick Saban reminded Kirby Smart and the Georgia Bulldogs that they are still, in fact, his little bitch. Why anyone thought this would play out any differently? Saban and the Tide continue to prove you just can't bet against them. I'll admit, I was as confident as ever taking Georgia at the -6.5 point spread. I mean, this defense was only allowing 6.5 points per game all year coming in, and Bryce Young orchestrated a complete annihilation of that defense, that historic defense that we had been talking about. It was embarrassing on all fronts for the Bulldogs. This performance, you know, pretty much sealed up the Heisman Trophy probably for Bryce Young here, and Georgia's going to have something to think about when it comes to their quarterback room. Does Stenson Bennett really have what it takes to take them to that level of national champion, or do they need to insert the JT Daniels, the former five-star recruit, the former transfer from USC, who has more talent, but Bennett, you know, has done his thing all season. So we'll see what Kirby Smart does there, if a switch will be made. In the Pitt-Wake Forest game in the ACC, billed as Kenny Pickett versus Sam Hartman, really turned into Pitt defense interception fest. It was an unfortunate end to the season for the Wake Forest offense and Hartman, who were completely held in check. In addition to the interceptions, the Panthers pounced on Hartman for 5 sacks. Pickett, as usual, had a solid performance, as he will head to the Heisman ceremony for an outside shot. And I gotta say, it was just nice not seeing another Clemson easy ACC title win. So hopefully this conference continues the parity we saw this year moving forward. And there are some good teams, and I don't know if Clemson is going to return this quickly to, I mean, they had a great end to their season, their offense came alive, but there's some things that they'll need to get worked out to return to the top upper echelon of teams in the country. The Big Ten Championship, Michigan-Iowa, well, this was emphatically not the letdown game for the Michigan Wolverines. I had a small gut feeling going to this one, just based off of past history with Harbaugh and Michigan, that they could blow it, but they finally proved to be a real, true national championship favorite. This is the type of performance truly great teams put on following such an emotional win they had against rival Ohio State. A lot of times we saw a Michigan team or just other very good teams, not great teams, lay down an egg in this game. Michigan proved they are a great team. And in my opinion, the performances over the last weeks with Ohio State and then this Iowa beatdown should have propelled Michigan into the top spot, of course. And speaking of those rankings, actually, let's just discuss them right now. The final college football playoff rankings are in. And we have a familiar face at the top spot, and that is number one, Alabama, the Nick Saban-led Crimson Tide. Do it again. They claim another SEC championship, as we talked about, embarrassing the Bulldogs. Michigan comes in at number two. I really think if the committee wasn't worried about some type of rematch with Bulldogs and Tide, Michigan did enough, I think, to claim that top spot, especially since they were already ranked above Alabama. Yes, the SEC is better than the Big Ten, but Alabama They should have got beat by Auburn. They did get beat by a Texas A&M team who didn't have a great end of the season. They lost to LSU to end their year. I just think the resume and the way that Michigan ended the season, I would have had Michigan won if we're truly not worrying about the rematch. Now, Barta said that didn't play a role. I'm calling absolute bullshit on that because absolutely it did. They just were never going to move Cincinnati to 3 and Georgia to 4, which would have been fine by me. Georgia looked horrible. They looked absolutely horrible against Alabama. So why not move undefeated Cincinnati to 4 to 3, Georgia down to 4, make Michigan 1, then you still have the same matchups. Then you still have Michigan, Georgia, Bama, Cincy. So in the end, you know, we're still going to get the best team's going to win in the end. And the rematch could have been avoided, but they were just never going to put Georgia to 4 and Cincinnati above them. And I get it. We didn't really want to see another Alabama-Georgia game, especially the way that SEC championship went. It was not that exciting. It was not that exciting. So Georgia, obviously, like I said, comes in at 3. Cincinnati made history with that number 4 spot. Good for the Bearcats. I'm going to be honest here. I am rooting for Cincinnati to pull off the upset against Alabama. I wouldn't mind seeing a Harbaugh win here, too. It would be a cool national championship, Cincinnati, Michigan. It's fairly long odds here, but Cincinnati in the spread so far is getting some love. Michigan kind of not getting much love at all. But if we're looking at Vegas, it looks like it will be another Alabama-Georgia rematch in the national championship. Let's hope for the opposite. I'm saying let's hope for the opposite. I think that would be better for college football. I think it would be more fun, more intriguing to watch. All right, let's move on to this coaching carousel just continues to chug right along the coaching train. And we'll get started with Brett Venables, who, if you listened a few weeks ago, I had been mentioning Brett Venables, and I said, this guy needs to get a job. He deserves a job. What he's done for Clemson on the defensive side of the ball over the past 7 years is extraordinary. I thought he deserved a job before this. I think he was waiting for the right time, and obviously Oklahoma is a perfect fit as he had previously spent about 10 years there. So the Sooners, once that job opened up, it was a natural fit for Brent Venables to finally make the move to the head coaching status in college football. I think that's a fantastic hire for Oklahoma, especially since they're going to be moving to the SEC, so getting a more defensive-minded coach. And then they can bring in a good offensive-minded guy to handle the offensive side of the ball, which if Caleb Williams stays, they're going to be a good team. When you have a top quarterback like that, you're going to be able to be in the race. And eventually, again, once that switch to the SEC is made, I think Venables will have a good defense in place to match up against other SEC foes. Then we move on to Miami. A huge hire there as they were able to lure back Mario Cristobal. As you remember from his playing days, he was a Miami Hurricane. This just felt these hires, the two that we talked about here and the next one that we're going to talk about, were finally, you know, felt like true fits. It was like, okay, yes, Brent Venables to Oklahoma, Mario Cristobal back to Miami. These felt more, you know, well, definitely less shocking than the Riley to USC and then Brian Kelly, unbelievable, to LSU. So I think this is a decent fit for Miami. It was kind of ugly the way they handled Manny Diaz there at the end. They were in talks with Mario Cristobal. Diaz was still on the recruiting trail trying to get kids to come to the Hurricanes. They didn't have an AD. It was weird. It was a weird situation and kind of a slap in the face to Manny Diaz. But as some of his other players pointed out about Diaz when he was at Temple, he had, before he took the Miami job, he was recruiting kids and got kids to sign for the Temple Owls and then, you know, turned around and left them high and dry and went to Miami. So kind of a little bit of a revenge there for Manny Diaz, but Mario Cristobal, great recruiter, going to has a ton of talent to recruit down in Florida, in the state of Florida. Obviously, he has ties out west as he was in at Oregon, so it should be a decent fit for Miami. Maybe they'll finally be able to turn it around, that program, back to their winning ways from decades ago, it seems now. The other high profile head coaching hire that I wanted to discuss was Notre Dame. They promoted defensive coordinator Marcus Freeman, who's a young guy, a lot of upside there. He knows what it takes to be a Notre Dame head football coach, so I like the fit. Again, this is Venables, Cristobal, Freeman, all good fits at these schools. It felt like the natural move for Notre Dame to promote the Marcus Freeman to that spot. And Brian Kelly really wanted him and Reese to follow down to LSU. Now Reese is staying with Freeman as his offensive coordinator, continuing in his role for the Fighting Irish. I think that says a little bit about Brian Kelly, as those guys did not really want to follow him, and they wanted to stay in South Bend, and they wanted to get it done, and Marcus Freeman is the man to take over for Notre Dame. And speaking of Brian Kelly, if you haven't noticed, it took all of 10 seconds for him to develop a newly found Southern accent. As he was introduced at the LSU basketball game at halftime, somehow he acted like he was born and raised in Southern Louisiana, as he put on quite the show and got ripped rightfully for his Southern accent that popped up out of nowhere from the guy that was born in Massachusetts and spent like the past 27 years or so in the Northern Midwest. Again, doesn't seem like the culture type of guy. Seems fake. I don't think it's going to work out for Brian Kelly. I think LSU is going to regret that hire more than some of these other ones. I don't doubt that Brian Kelly can coach a damn good team. I just don't know if it can happen in Louisiana. And then we're going to move to a coordinator hire. And the reason I bring this up is I think this could be a huge, huge move for the Ohio State Buckeyes, as they were able to lure away Oklahoma State's Jim Knowles from his position to a lateral position back to Ohio State from Oklahoma State. And he put out an outstanding defense this year for the Cowboys. I had been talking about the Cowboys defense for a few weeks now as a dominant force, just right behind Georgia as the most dominant defense in the country, it seemed like, for the past few weeks. They were getting after quarterbacks, leading the country in sacks. They barely gave up any points. That was a well-coached defensive unit for Oklahoma State. And even though they were kind of ripped up by Shapen and that freshman quarterback in the Baylor game for the Big 12 championship, that Baylor didn't do shit in the second half. That all happened in the first half, and that all happened with Baylor getting the ball in plus territory and Knowles having to, do what he can with that. As Sanders, like I spoke about, threw all those interceptions. It was Grimes versus Knowles. Grimes got the better of him there, but Jim Knowles is a fantastic hire for the Ohio State Buckeyes, who needed to make something, who needed to make a change on the defensive end of the ball. Something needed to be done, as they were just not good on that side at all. And that started from game one on. I had been talking about the holes in that Swiss cheese defense for the Buckeyes. All right, let's move on to some of these marquee bowl matchups. Excuse me while I just fill up my glass here a little bit. Nice little refill. All right. So we got the UTSA San Diego State game. The Roadrunners almost pulled off that undefeated season, but an anvil came crashing down in the form of the North Texas Mean Green in the last game of the regular season. However, they did bounce back to win the Conference USA Championship game. San Diego State, they also had themselves a very successful campaign. The highlight being that 3-overtime victory over eventual Pac-12 champion Utah. Huge win there. They churn out a lot of yards on the ground and do a damn good job of stopping the run on the defensive side of the ball. The Roadrunners are 2.5-point favorites. I would look out for San Diego State to pull that cover that spread and pull that upset probably. UCLA and NC State, two teams that had better than expected seasons, are in this matchup. Also two teams who can put up a lot of yards and a lot of points. Chip Kelly, he finally had his breakout season that he can, you know, use to grow upon, as he will fight now for recruits in Southern California with the incoming Lincoln Riley, a juggernaut in Lincoln Riley. That's not going to be easy to recruit against or play against every year. But Zach Charbonnet and Britton Brown, they lead a strong running game for the Bruins. The Wolfpack on the other side, they rode their upset in that 2-overtime victory over Clemson to propel them to their 9-3 season. NC State, you know, they get it done on the defensive side of the ball, only allowing 19 points a game. That will be a good matchup. Oregon, Oklahoma. This is a matchup that very well could have been a playoff semifinal earlier in the season. Unfortunately for both, they ended with losses to rivals and without a head ball coach. Can't say either program ever thought at the beginning of the season Riley or Mario Cristobal would be anywhere else other than Norman and Eugene. These are now two programs forging new paths ahead. The most interesting part about this game is that Bob Stoops is returning to the sidelines for the Sooners in a one-game capacity to lead his former team. Now, both still have a ton of talent, and this should be a good game overall. I will be tuning in. Wake Forest, Texas A&M. For both these teams, neither season ended on a high note. Wake Forest got spanked in the ACC Championship game by the Pitt Panthers defense, and Texas A&M was upset by a very average LSU team in Coach O's final game there in Baton Rouge. And that may have been why LSU decided to not make a larger push for Jimbo Fisher. Who knows? Who knows what would have happened if the outcome would have been different in that game? But if the Demon Deacons thought they had a tough time with Pitt's defense, they better use the next few weeks to get things figured out again offensively, because A&M is allowing just under 15 points a game and have proved to be a dominant unit. Wake Forest for the season was an offensive juggernaut, putting up slightly over 41 points a game. Something's going to give here, and the more reliable unit seems to be the Aggies D. Penn State, Arkansas. Outback Bowl. I'm a bit surprised Penn State got the Outback Bowl nod here against an overachieving Arkansas team. Penn State's defense is elite. We saw that all season long. The issue, their offense is anything but. Sean Clifford is just not that guy at the quarterback position. Pittman better have KJ Jefferson and that Arkansas offense firing on all cylinders in this one against a very tough Nittany Lions front. Unfortunately, us fans, we were robbed of a matchup of two of the top five receivers in the country in Treylon Burks for the Razorbacks and Jahan Dotson for Penn State. They had a real chance to put on quite the showcase in this one. But Burks, he has already opted out, and it seems like Dotson is leaning that way as well. Both will be high draft picks in the upcoming NFL draft. Penn State is favored by 2 points here, and Burks, you know, with Burks out, I like Penn State defense to hold Arkansas in check. I think with Burks, Arkansas may have had a better chance of winning this game without him. I like the PSU defense. It's, again, the more reliable unit. Let's take a look at the outside of the semifinal game, the rest of the New Year's Six Bowls. We're not going to do full previews yet. We're going to give that a few weeks until we get closer to those games, and then we'll dive into the full previews of those. But let's just read them off. We got Pitt, Michigan State. I think that will be a fun matchup. Kenny Pickett against a very weak Sparty secondary could be ugly. Notre Dame, Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State and... you know, without Knowles on Knowles, I believe will stay to coach in this bowl game, as he should. The players deserve that before he moves on to Ohio State. Notre Dame, you know, they probably have something to prove. They're going to want to prove something now that Brian Kelly left. I don't know how much Oklahoma State's going to get up for this game. I could see Notre Dame winning that, but again, we'll dive into these previews later. Utah, Ohio State. I think that's a great matchup, a really good matchup. Utah is playing some of the best football in the entire country to end the year. Ohio State, they have holes. They have holes. Ole Miss, Baylor. Ole Miss had a fantastic season. Lane Kiffin, he has to be on cloud nine with the way that the Rebels played this year. And Baylor, Dave Aranda. Aranda, Kiffin, this will be a fantastic matchup. I'm excited for all of these New Year's Six Bowls. And now, let's move to the most coveted trophy in all of sports, the Heisman Trophy, and the final invitees were released. And we have Bryce Young of Alabama, who finished the season with 4,322 passing yards, 43 touchdowns, and only 4 interceptions, good for 68% completion percentage, and he tacked on another 3 rushing touchdowns. I would say his Heisman moment had to be that SEC championship game. As I already said, that probably just locked it up. He went 26 of 44, 421 yards, 3 touchdowns, no pick, and one of his 3 rushing touchdowns occurred in that game against a defense that was giving up 6.5 points a game. He nearly had 300 yards in the first half. That was quite the performance. Not one that the Georgia defense was expecting to allow happen. Bryce Young definitely enters that day as the favorite for the Heisman Trophy. C.J. Stroud of Ohio State, 3,862 yards, 38 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, with a 70% completion percentage. His Heisman moment was the Michigan State game, where he only had 3 incompletions. On 35 passes, he completed 32 of them, 432 yards, 6 touchdowns, no interceptions. It was an incredible performance, and maybe the best offensive performance of the entire year. That first half alone was incredible for C.J. Stroud. And unfortunately for him, he had to go play Michigan, and Bryce Young got the chance to really have his Heisman moment, as we just discussed in that SEC championship game. Kenny Pickett of Pitt, who has been my guy all year long, I still will say he should be the number one pick. Number one quarterback, that is, off the draft board, if we're projecting to pro prospects. Again, I haven't done my full quarterback rankings as I always do. Those will be released in the coming months. But Kenny Pickett, fantastic year. It was an incredible, smart decision for him to come back and play for the Pitt Panthers this year. 4,319 passing yards, 42 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, and 67% completion percentage. He added another 241 yards on the ground with his legs and 5 touchdowns. His Heisman moment, in my opinion, was that overtime win against North Carolina. It was just a fantastic matchup against 2 great quarterbacks in Kenny Pickett and Sam Howell, and he had outdueled Howell. He went 25 of 43. 346 yards, 3 touchdowns, and had the game-winning TD toss in overtime in the driving rain. Kenny Pickett. And the final invitee, Aiden Hutchinson of the Michigan Wolverines, with 58 total tackles, 33 solo, 14 sacks, which is good enough for second in the country, and 2 forced fumbles to throw on that very good stat line. His Heisman moment had to be that Ohio State game where he put up 7 tackles, also had 3 sacks. They were getting after C.J. Stroud, that defensive front, and they were led by Hutchinson, who, by most people, looks like to be the number one overall draft pick in the NFL draft, or at least ranked as the number one player on many draft boards. Now, in my opinion, the committee got one thing wrong, and it is Hutchinson. I would have went with Will Anderson Jr., and I've had Will Anderson Jr. in my Heisman watch for a few weeks now. I mean, when you just look at his line, to me it just trumps Hutchinson. And he's playing for the number one team in the country. 91 total tackles, 52 solo, and he leads the country. Leads Hutchinson, leads the entire country, first in the nation with sacks at 15.5. Will Anderson, I think, was a snub. They got it wrong there. All right, enough of the Heisman, enough of that. We have made it to the end of From the Basement Bar podcast, and we, as always, we are ending on the one thing that made me say, I hate that. And this, this I was just scrolling through Instagram. You know, I was just came onto some golf content. Obviously, we're in the winter months, so, you know, I'm seeking the glory days of our warmer weather where golf is more prevalent and I can sneak away from the wife and kid and get out there to the course, although my golf game has been atrocious, but which makes me hate this even more. This is why I hate this, and I'm going to sound like a grumpy old man, but I hate seeing videos on social media watching little kids just be good at golf. I'm talking about 6, 7, 8, 10-year-olds that would spank me, would kick my ass striking the ball better than I could ever strike the ball, and it pisses me off. I know, grumpy old man, that's me in this regard. Little kids being good at golf. Younger, just people that are young, like 20 years younger than me, I can't be okay with it being them being that much better than me at golf. Golf is so frustrating. So maybe the one thing I hate is not just kids being good at golf, but me sucking at golf. And I, so that's what it is. That's the one thing I hate this week. I'm jealous, essentially. Well, thank you for listening this week's From the Basement Bar podcast. Until next week.